This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Hey, wake up! New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Violence.
Welcome to Pop Rocks Radio. As always, I am your host, Bijan. My guest today is a legend in the world of power pop, garage rock, and all things fuzzed out and melodic. From The Stems to DM3, Datura 4, and his solo work, he is behind some of the coolest music to ever come out of Australia. He has a great new single, Apple of Life, out now on Alive Records, along with his latest single with The Stems called Deep Freeze on Cheer Squad Records and Tapes. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the stage, Dom Mariani. Dom, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for inviting me along.
This is really a thrill for me. So I'm really excited. I'm trying not to geek out, but I can't promise anything. So you're in Perth, correct?
Yeah, in Fremantle, actually. That's a small port town just south of Perth.
Well, I actually want to talk about Perth a little bit later on, but my first question for you, you have multiple bands, a thriving solo career, a family, a day job, you are consistently putting out new music. When do you sleep?
I didn't sleep very well, actually. I had a rough night last night.
I'm sorry.
I don't do much else, really. I have a couple of hobbies, but generally, yeah, it's the music, and I do architectural work. I work for myself, so I have my own private practice, and yeah, I just try and fit the two together, make them work alongside each other. Sometimes I'm busier with the music, sometimes I'm busy with the architectural work, but I did some studies when I was younger and got qualified and worked for a short period of time, and then my ambition was to be a rock and roll star. that sort of worked out for a little while. The Stems did quite well, and then when that sort of ended, I went back to the day job. I started a family, and I thought, well, I've got to pay the bills somehow, otherwise they're going to kick me out. I did that. Took time out, to do various projects like the Some Loves recording, and I was still signed to a label at the time, so I took a good 6 months out to do that. The DM3 again, a few tours here and there, go to Europe, Japan, and been to the States a couple of times, but not to do any extensive touring, just things like South by Southwest and the odd show in New York. Apart from that, I'm obsessed with music, so I didn't think I'd still be doing it, to be honest, at my age now. But in a way, it sort of keeps me going, and still got a big interest in doing it, and the various projects I've had have kept me kind of busy and entertained, I guess, as a musician, a songwriter.
I'll bet. I knew about many of your bands, but as I was looking into it more, I had no idea how many projects you still have concurrent now. and I want to talk, we're going to talk about as many of them as we can, but I do want to talk about the new music that you have right now. Tell me about the new single, Apple of Life. This is your second solo single that you've put out this year. When did it, or where did it come from creatively? And is it pointing the way to a full album?
Yeah, well, it's a title track of the album. It seemed obvious at the time. I've been working on these things for, I guess, the last 4 years, in between the Datura 4 band, which is the band that I'm really playing more so with these days. The Stems also comes back and plays various shows and tours at least once or twice a year. But yeah, Apple of Life, it didn't really fit with the Datura thing and it, as well as the Stems thing. It's more of the kind of pop guitar stuff that I do. I accumulated a number of tunes and, yeah, just sort of slowly chipped away at this solo album. I thought I'd be finished with it a lot sooner than later, but I finally finished it. And Apple of Life, yeah, it pretty much, it's just about growing up and, you know, getting older and going out there and experiencing, you know, the things that come your way with life, you know, all the facets of life, you know, love and hate and, you know, all the things that come with it, you know.
Well, you know, you kind of touched on one thing. So I know, you know, this track along with your earlier solo album, Homespun Blues and Greens, they have their own distinct feel compared to a lot of your band work. When you sit down to write a song, the song comes out, do you look at it and say, okay, well, this doesn't fit with any of my band, so I'll release it as a solo track? Do you just sit down and write, you know, with that solo project in mind?
Don't have any routine or anything like that. Generally, I'll pick up the guitar and, you know, what comes is sometimes a song, and it usually happens in the morning when I've, you know, picked up the guitar and I've got sort of nothing cluttering in my head. So I, you know, I've come up with a riff, or sometimes if I'm sitting on a train or something like that, I'll come up with some lyrics and jot them down on my phone. But yeah, I don't have specific, you know, routines or anything like that, you know. I guess the pop stuff, they kind of, you know, coexist for me, you know. I love lots of different styles of music, obviously, and one minute I'll be sitting down and writing some kind of surf instrumental, the next minute I'll, you know, come up with some, I guess, the song that's more in a pop style. And then there's the Datura 4 stuff, which is more linked to my guitar style, I guess. As well, growing up as a young guitar player, I was very much into heavier blues guitar players, but yeah, I'm into that as well. So yeah, I don't really have, I can't sort of give you any secrets there, I'm sorry, but yeah, it just happens. Yeah,
I've heard you mention before too, you mentioned that, you know, growing up you were into heavy guitar stuff. I've also heard you mention that influences like Creedence or the Beatles. The single that you released earlier this year, Jangleland, backed with the cover of Day After Day, great album, really love that. Those feel like love letters to both the Byrds and Badfinger. How have those bands shaped your writing?
In a fairly big way, really. I was always, I guess, attracted to sort of melodic music as a kid. Remember hearing Day After Day on the radio and thinking what a fantastic song it was. You know, at that time, I really didn't know much about the band or anything like that. I just heard the song on the radio and loved it. And as I got more into music and discovered all these bands like Badfinger and, you know, obviously the Beatles were, you know, quite big, and we all knew about them. And Creedence Clearwater Revival connected in a way that, again, as a young guy sort of starting to play guitar, learning how to play the guitar, Creedence songs are quite easy to play, but also they just had a real immediate sort of rocky and catchy kind of vibe to them, which, again, listening to the transistor radio, those songs would be blasting out, and I'm thinking, is that Creedence Clearwater Revival band again? Wow, it sounds, yeah, that's them again. And they had so many hits at the time, and it kind of coincided with me being like, you know, 14 years old. And they'd probably broken up by then, but they were still getting lots of airplay on the radio. Right. So, yeah, the Beatles, Bee Gees, I loved a lot. They were being played quite a bit on the radio. T-Rex and, yeah, people like that.
Well, you know, you mentioned being 13, 14, and you started playing in bands when you were a teenager too, correct?
Yeah, I had a high school band. We started off as an instrumental band. My guitar teacher was very much into the Shadows and all that kind of thing. So I learned to play a few of those tunes like Apache and, FBI and things like that. So we started off as an instrumental band. It was three of us to start with. We didn't have a drummer. And we were all playing guitars. Then one guy said, I'll play bass. And we found a drummer. And that was my high school band. And we were called Impact. And from then, that band changed its name very many, many times, actually. As we kind of progressed as a band and we got more into lots of other music, we played a lot of Creedence. A couple of guys in the band were into the Bee Gees, and they introduced me to the Bee Gees, which, and I'm thankful to this day because I really love those guys. And, you know, the Monkees were a big influence growing up, you know, coming home from school and seeing the TV show. And then as we got more and more into it, you know, we started finding out about bands like Led Zeppelin and, you know, your heavier bands. So that was me as a sort of late teenager.
So how did you go from there to the band The Ghost Arts?
That's an interesting question, that one. The band I was in, two of the guys that were in my high school band, we carried on. And we had, I can't recall the name we had before The Ghost Arts. It was the Nitwits. Yeah, that's right. It was called the Nitwits.
Nitwits.
It was like a new wave band. So we were, you know, as musical trends came along, we were kind of, you know, buying the records and getting into those sort of sounds. And the Ghost Arts was pretty much part of that sort of new wave scene, or the music that we were trying to play. We started off as a very 60s influenced band, but as we progressed, we were listening to some of the English bands that were coming through at the time. And we were influenced by them for a little while. But after a while, I got a little bit sick of that. I didn't think that was really me. And then I formed the Stems pretty much. Some of the guys wanted to get into more kind of artier, darker stuff. And I wasn't really wanting to go that way. I was more of a melody man. And I just said, look, mate, bad enough of The Ghost Arts, and I'm forming my own band, which is going to be 60s styles, garage rock, and and then the rest is history, I guess.
Yeah, I would love to talk about the Stems. When you were starting out with the Stems, it seemed that this is, I'm saying early 80s, maybe 83, somewhere around there. Australia seemed to really be having this golden moment where all these great bands were breaking through. And I mean, a wide range of bands. I mean, besides the Stems, there was like, I mean, Hoodoo Gurus, The Church, INXS, Lime Spiders. I mean, the list just goes on and on and on. I don't have a concept of how tight-knit a community across Australia the music community is, but did you feel like you guys were part of some sort of wider movement at the time, or because of the influences that you were bringing to it, was this just was the stem sound just so unique and apart from everyone else?
I think there seemed to be I felt there was a movement away from the kind of synth bands that were quite popular at the time, the sort of stuff that was coming out of the UK. Like Australia very much at the time was absorbing a lot of UK trends in music. And a lot of those bands that were coming through the early 80s, you know, we're talking sort of after the sort of new wave thing, which was more sort of the bands like, well, Elvis Costello, your Rock Pile and Blondie and things like that. It started to get very kind of synth orientated keyboards, which I wasn't really a big fan of myself. And I think there was quite a few of us that felt that way and were in the same boat. So we all picked up our guitars and were channeling, you know, just rock and roll music that we really like, three chords. And that happened to be, for me, was like 60s garage and 60s music. And the Hoodoo Gurus were one band that sort of came through and were one of the first of that sort of, I guess, wave. They came through Perth a few times, and the Scientists was another one that were more like swamp rock. And went and saw them a few times, and I formed the Stems, coincidentally, not long after or around the same time. So it seemed to be a few like-minded people and bands that were digging the same sort of music, and all of a sudden it started to get some kind of momentum. There's a few labels on the East Coast like Citadel, Waterfront, The Go-Go that were putting out these independent singles, and the Stems were lucky enough to were on the Citadel label with the first single, and it just kind of snowballed from there. We just seemed to time it very well with a lot of the other things that were going on at the time, yeah, the inner city sound.
So you signed with Citadel and then you went to Sydney. I mean, had you been out of Perth much before that?
No, we pretty much Perth-based for pretty much most of our career or the lifespan of the band. We started in Perth and we amassed a nice little following, and we thought, well, the next step now is we've got to record something and release a single. We had a manager at the time, sort of a guy who just latched onto us and said, I'll be your manager, I don't want anything. But he took the tape or cassette tape across to the East Coast and had a meeting with the guy from Citadel, John Needham, and he liked it. And then offered to release the single, and it just went from there. So on the strength of that, we actually went to Sydney and stayed in Sydney for 4 months, and I think that was a pretty good move. You know, it was a bold move because we're so far away from Sydney, and we drove across the Nullarbor. It took us a couple of days to get there, and staying with different friends and stuff, like Daryl Mather, who I played with in the Some Loves, shared a house with him. He'd been in the Lime Spiders. That's how I got to meet him. He came across to Perth during the Christmas break and saw us play and came up to us and said, I love you guys. I'm going to tell everybody about you guys when I go back to Sydney. So John Needham, I think, already knew about us. And we spent 4 months there and did quite a few gigs and build a following very, very quickly. And it just sort of snowballed from there.
Were there a lot of, differences between the two scenes? What was going on in Perth versus Sydney? And was it really dramatic, the difference?
Sydney was very vibrant at the time with the inner city rock and roll scene. Like you mentioned, some bands like the Lunch Fighters, the Screaming Tribesmen was another one. It was a Radio Birdman. It's been a band that at the time weren't as successful, but they were kind of a legendary status. And a lot of bands were picking up on that band again. So they were held in fairly high regard. And from that band, there was the New Christs and there was the Sunny Boys that obviously came a little bit before. Died Pretty was another band. The Moths, who released a single at the same time as us, I recall. We both released our singles on the same day. But, Perth was a lot smaller scene. You know, Sydney was where it was at. We had to go to Sydney. Obviously, these days, everyone can base themselves in their own city and have degrees of success. But back in the 80s, I guess in the 70s, it must have been the same. You had to go to Sydney or Melbourne to try and make some kind of impact on the Australian scene.
The Stems, to me, are such an interesting band and just an interesting story, because you released your debut in 1987, debut album At First Sight, Violets of Blue, and it was a huge success. I mean, really huge success. But then the band called it a day soon after that. Before I ask my question, I mean, do you want to comment on that?
How are you going? Yeah, it was a shame, really. I look back on it now. We were pretty young at the time, and we made a few, you know, mistakes, made some bad calls, but everything was going great. Everything we seemed to do seemed to go well for us, you know, every single that we released and EPs and that, even the album, they all topped the charts, and our crowds were getting bigger and bigger. Our audience was changing a little bit. Obviously, as we got more popular, we lost some of the more kind of hardened, you know, kind of punk rock fans, but we gained a whole new audience. Obviously, our album cracked the mainstream charts and all that kind of thing, and it was all looking really good. But just we done a lot of touring. Things inside the band weren't going very well. The management, we made a terrible mistake there. Got the wrong management. And it was basically myself who called it a day. I couldn't handle it anymore. So I just said, look, I've had enough, and walked out of the band, and the band didn't carry on. So it was quite a dramatic end. And the label weren't very happy about it, that's for sure. Because they invested quite a bit of time and obviously some money in the band. And that's what happened.
I mean, it's band stuff, right? I mean, that's...
Yeah, yeah. It's, you know, it happens. And we're just one of many.
Well, you know, the thing that really blows me away about the Stems is the next full album of Stems music didn't come out for 20 years. You know, 2007, Heads Up, right? And in those 20 years, you guys had gone from being this great new band, kind of were legends at that point. What do you think it was about? Was it, about the band or that first record that kept the story alive all that time?
I can't put my finger on that, but I guess it's like any kind of music, if it resonates with enough people, you know, really take it to their heart. It, you know, people still remember who you are. And that was one thing that really surprised me when, you know, we did a reunion 10 years after the band had split. And we just did a local, one major local show, and then one sort of a little bit south of Perth here. And they were massive. And, you know, we thought, wow, this is incredible, you know. And the following year we got asked to do a festival, and that was it pretty much. And all of us were kind of in that period of our lives where, you know, we had young kids and we weren't sure if we really wanted to take it on as a full-time thing anymore. So it was really just the one-offs. And it wasn't until 2003 that someone came along and said, hey, I think you guys should tour again, because there seems to be a lot of interest in your band. There's interest in a lot of bands of your kind of ilk. What do you think? And we said, well, yeah, okay. So we were quite cautious about it. We just like do a few gigs in Perth and a couple on the East Coast to see how it went. And the show sold out, and it was an amazing tour. And we kind of went, well, this is good. Maybe we should keep doing this. Not every week, but you know, maybe once every 3 or 4 months or 6 months, and see how far it can go. And it got to the point where it was really going well, and we thought, well, we should do another album. And we ended up recording this second album, which was Heads Up. And yeah, it's really just kept going since then. Since 2003, we've been not playing all the time, but we've done quite a bit of touring, and when time permits, I guess, when everyone's kind of in the same space and we're available, we really like to do it. And the band's better than it's ever been playing live. It's a good live band, very good live band. We've become, I guess, a bit more R&B with the stuff that we do now. Sensed that with the last few singles that we've released, but it's still keeping that kind of Stems garage rock with the melody. That's what I do. Like, I think one thing that I can say that I'm good at is I can write pretty good melodies and catchy tunes, you know?
Yes, you can.
So that, I think that's always been the key with me. And I guess that comes from listening to bands like the Beatles and the Creedence, when every song that they were writing was a potential single. And I've always had that kind of, thing. If I write a song, it's got to be, an immediate hit, or it's a potential hit. Not that they ever become hits or anything like that. I'm not delusional at all, but that's the way I apply that craft.
You know, I have to say this, and because you're here, and because I'm a geek, I guess. But for me, the kickoff for Sad Girl, the second song on the album, to me, that is akin to the count in on I Saw Her Standing There. It's like you hear that and you just know you're in for a kick-ass rock song. No matter how many times I hear it, how many years go by, it still does it to me every time. You know, there's no question there. I just wanted to tell you that. I love that. Yeah. You know, you mentioned your live band now. The last iteration of the band with the original guitarist, Richard Lane, ended, I think, 2009-ish. Since then, I mean, some of the guitar players you've had are, I mean, amazing. Davey Lane, who has a great solo album out now, and has also been with bands like UMI, and Ashley Naylor from the band Even. Another great band. With these other guitar players that you've had play with the band, do you encourage them to put their own stamp on the music, or is everybody just kind of gel around that stem sound?
They bring their own thing, you know. Like Davey, obviously from UMI, he's a little bit younger than us, but, he's a great live performer and it's a great guitar player. Ashley as well, you know, he's sort of versed in all that stuff we love. You know, he can play jangle, he can play rock, he's an all-round, you know, guitarist. Like he always says, I like two styles of music, it's 60s and 70s, and so he fits in perfectly with what we're all about. You know, we're not trying to reinvent anything, but we're just trying to do the best we can within the music that we like. And, we still love that stuff. So those guys are perfect because they're into it as well. You know, it's just great to meet guys that are like-minded and into the same music. We can talk about the same bands and get carried away about certain things. You know, we're just music lovers.
I mean, you released a single last year, Falling from the Sky. You have the new single that came out a couple months ago, Deep Freeze. Maybe another album coming for the Stems?
Yeah, we're working on some stuff now. I've just put down a few demos. So, and I've got Dave coming over tomorrow morning. That's Dave Shaw, drummer. He's got a couple of tunes as well. So, we're sort of working away at getting an album out there. It'll be next year. This album will come out. So, yeah, I think so far so good. I think the songs we've got are pretty good.
Any chance you're going to tour with the album too?
There's always a chance. Definitely Europe, as you know, Europe's always been good to us and myself over the years. So I've done a fair bit over there. Generally, it's Spain, Italy, and a bit of France, and sometimes I get up to Scandinavia and Germany. But yeah, I think there'll be some kind of touring. I don't know about the States anymore, but you know, if someone wants to bring us over, I'm into it.
Did the Stems ever play the States originally when you guys were together?
Not in the day, no. We did Little Stevens, a big festival he put on, which was, I think, 2005, the Underground Garage Festival. That was in New York. We did that. We came over for South by Southwest, and we played Maxwell's in New Jersey. So not a lot of gigs in the States, but, yeah, we done those few.
I know Little Steven is a big fan of the Stems. I think that's a good fan to have. Yeah.
That was quite unusual the way that all happened. He's got his radio show, The Underground Garage, and his personal assistant reached out to me one day with an email, and I wasn't sure if it was a bogus email or not, asking for more music. He'd never heard of the Stems, actually. He connected with me via DM3. Okay. He'd been playing some DM3 on his radio station or his show, and I sent him a bunch of stuff, some CDs, and included the Stems in there, and he was like straight back to me. Who are these Stems, you know? He thought we were from the 60s. But I said, no, we were from the 80s, you know? And then he was touring out here with Bruce Springsteen, and he wanted to meet me, and that's how I got to meet him and struck up some kind of friendship relationship. And over the years, he's been very kind. So being a big supporter of my music, and when he does tour, he always invites me on to the shows and we catch up.
Great.
It's very cool.
So before the Stems folded, you had actually started playing, you mentioned the Some Loves and DM3 over here, really big cult following. You recorded the album Something or Other in, I think, 1989 in the US with Mitch Easter. Was that, were you a fan? Was that something the band chose to work with him, or was that a label thing?
We put Mitch forward to the label, but Daryl Mather, the other half of the Some Loves, he and I, like I said, met during the Stems period, and then we went there and I shared a house with him for 4 months. And during that period, we connected on, you know, music and a lot of music that we both liked. And a lot of that was the power pop thing. And, you know, your bands like Your Bad Finger and Raspberries and all that kind of thing. And he was wanting to record a single. He said, we should do something. Let's record a single. So before we went back to Perth, we recorded our first single, which was It's My Time. And the B-side was Don't Talk About Us. And it did really well. It came out on Citadel. And from there, we kept in touch and we said, look, let's do something else later on. And we ended up recording another single, Know You Now. And Know You Now came out just after the Stems had broken up. So the label weren't too happy that the Stems had broken up, but I pitched to Some Loves. I said, look, I've got this other side project. Would you be interested in releasing that on Mushroom? And they said, yes, you'll really like it. And they released that. And then from there, we talked about doing an album. And in the meantime, Daryl had made some kind of contact with Mitch back in the days when people used to write letters, and he wrote him a letter to say that, you know, love your music. And we were fans, obviously, Let's Active, and he produced REM, which we both enjoyed the first few albums. And from there, it was the connection was we had this song called Know You Now, and a couple of other tracks that we're going to use for the B-side. We got into talking with the label and said, well, we'd love to work with this guy, Mitch Easter. That's okay. And they said, yeah, well, that sounds great. Why don't we fly you over and you can meet him and you can mix the songs? Because we'd already recorded the tracks. So that's how we got to meet Mitch, and we went down to his drive-in studio there in Winston-Salem and sat in while he mixed the tracks and got on pretty well with him. And we said, well, look, if we do an album, we'd love you to be involved. And that's how that all happened. So Daryl and I set about writing a bunch of songs. Daryl lived in Sydney. I lived in Perth. Daryl came over. We spent 3 or 4 months sort of writing and honing the tunes. And then what happened was we planned to go to the States to record the whole album and mix it, but something had happened down in his town, and it was a big tornado or something had gone through and ripped up most of the town. So he decided to stay back at that time. And we started the album without him here in Perth, in Planet Studios, where we recorded the Stems album. And then we went across and did a bunch more recording and mixed the album with him. So that's how that sort of came about.
That was your first time in the US?
I was there the year before when we mixed the single. Yeah. So we mixed, we were there in 88. We went over for, I think it was about a week. And we caught up with Mitch and met a bunch of people, went and saw some bands. We were in New York for a few days and we saw Robin Hitchcock and the Feelies, I think it was, at the Beacon Theatre.
That's awesome.
And then we drove down and we called into Washington and caught up with Tommy Keane. So we were on a bit of a guitar pop sort of pilgrimage there. Yeah. And we went and saw a band called The Original Sins with him, a band from, I don't know where they were from, but they were good. And then made our way down to Winston-Salem and met Mitch. Yeah. So that was cool. And Chris Stamey was there. I remember I was a big fan of the DB, so it's nice to meet him.
Wow, that's awesome. Yeah. I bet the producing that album for Citadel probably eased the blow a little bit from losing the Stems.
Yeah. Look, it was a great experience. And kept the friendship going with Mitch, and he was involved in the DM3 recordings as well, to the mixing on the first two and some tracks on the third. Yeah.
DM3, I mean, that's another band, like I said, has got really a strong cult following here. I mean, when the band was active, did you feel that?
I knew there were some people that really liked the band. I've made a few contacts in the States that were into the band. But Europe seemed to really like the band. We toured Europe a few times, and we had a few things come out on a label there. And that was really heartening, because at the time, I decided not to do the Some Loves anymore. That sort of came to an end. And DM3 was my sort of local band that I'd formed with a couple of other guys. And it's holding down a day job and rehearsing at night and playing gigs on the weekend kind of thing. And we got asked to do a festival in Denmark called Roskilde. And that was the first time we ventured out of Australia, pretty much, or my first time to play music. And from there, we played a couple of smaller gigs in France and Germany and Italy. And it made me realize that, man, there's some kind of following here. I should come back and do a bit more playing. And, yeah, that's how that band sort of, I guess, kept going, was through the European tours that we did. We'd go to Europe and we'd have a pretty good following and have a great time. So it kind of kept that project going for quite a while.
What do you think about that band? Is there a particular song that you think captures the essence of what that band is about?
First single, Foolish, was it? Yeah, I liked that. And a few off the second album, which I quite like. It's Second Floor, I think. I really like that song. Yeah, there's a few. But I think capture the essence of that band. One Times, Two Times, Devastated, which seems to be a popular song with a lot of people. That was come up pretty well.
Second Floor, you know, I just actually, the podcast I released yesterday, I played Second Floor, and, you know, all the power pop nerds in my Facebook group went nuts. They were like, oh, that song. And, you know, for us, it is, just, I mean, it's a textbook perfect power pop song. You released one version of it. It was mixed by Jeff Murphy. I was just talking to him about it, and he sends his regards, by the way.
Yeah, that was a great connection. You know, a fan of the Shoes, you know, and somehow we were connected, and we thought, well, we knew that he had a studio, or he did studio work. So we asked if he'd be interested in mixing a few tunes. And one was that one. But yeah, it was great to connect with him. You know, obviously the Shoes are a legendary band, and it's nice to be sort of connected with bands that you admire, people that you admire, yeah.
DM3's been wound down for quite a while now. Does that mean no more power pop is flowing out of you?
The new solo album, that's where it's going, you know. That, like, DM3, it came to an end, I guess, in that, you know, I thought we'd done as much as we could, and I needed to cull a few of the bands I was sort of involved in, because I had quite a few bands going at the same time. Each project would sort of come out and we'd get off at shows. So even the instrumental band, Majestic Kelp, I felt like that band, that these bands always start off with one album in mind for me. It's like, I've got this idea, I've got these songs, put them out, I'm going to record them all and put them all on an album. And then from there, it kind of starts to kind of snowball a bit. It's like, okay, I'll do another album, then another album. And, you know, all these, I guess the first album is almost like the instigator for the other records, the other songs that I'm going to be writing for the following album. So Majestic Cut was the same. I was only planning to do one album of instrumental tunes that I'd sort of accumulated over a period of time. I'd sort of done a small project during the Stems called the Stonefish. And, I just had these instrumental things, and I thought, I'm going to put them all on an album one day, and I did. And that band, it did four albums in the end, and it got better and better. And that got to a point where, okay, I think I've, you know, done what I set out to achieve there, and I shelved that band, and same thing with DM3. Daytura 4 seems to be the band that I'm working on, and that's coming onto like six or seven albums now. Again,
that's right.
A band that I was only going to ever just do one album of this stuff, and it's just kind of kept going.
But just quickly about Majestic Kelp, I love those albums. I think it was from the last one. The song Angel Angeline, I think, is just gorgeous. I really love that.
Yeah, that's my favorite record, that one, High Seas. It was a different lineup, actually. The first three albums was the same lineup, and the third album is also a really nice album too, I think. That really started to get where I was wanting to go with that band. Turn Up the Sun, that album.
You mentioned Daytura 4. Let's talk about them. It's straight up hard rock, some boogie rock, you know, less jangle, more Zeppelin, even Sabbath kind of feel to it. How did the whole project start?
Yeah, once again, it was a kind of side project, because I've always loved that music. I grew up with a lot of it. But I've always, you know, connected it with sort of riffs and catchy tunes. The stuff that I like is sort of late 60s, sort of maybe moving into the mid 70s a little bit. And so it's got to be something memorable. It's not just sort of thrashing, you know, heavy duty sort of guitar and, you know, heavy rock or heavy metal stuff. I'm not into heavy metal much, but it's very much of that kind of retro period. And I just had these tunes, again, that I wanted to put down on an album, and another friend of mine was into it, and we formed this group and started playing a few shows just for fun, basically, just to do this stuff and do the covers of Yardbirds and things like that. And yeah, we thought, well, we started writing a few tunes. I said, well, let's put these on an album. And it took us about 3 years to finally finish it off. But then we were thinking of releasing it ourselves, and then we sent it across to Alive, and they heard it, they liked it, and released it, and it just went from there again. You know, we
thought, well, let's do another album. That was fun. It got a good reaction, and now the band's sort of fairly well established. We've done a bit of touring overseas, and yeah, I just really enjoy it. Like, as a guitarist and as a songwriter, it's just another side of what I do and what I like. I always believe the best rock and roll and the best music, you know, needs a lot of different influences to really get that great tune. You know, like the stuff that I grew up with, you know, the musicians that were in those bands were into blues, they were into, you know, rock and roll, 50s rock and roll, or country music, or whatever it was that sort of brings things to their songwriting that I think if you listen to a lot of bands, like even the Beatles, you know, those guys were into a lot of great stuff, and they wrote the songs that they did just by having those great influences from the 50s and Motown, and, you know, the soul music and blues music and all that. So as a guitar player, I really enjoy playing in a band like Datura 4. Not that we're the kind of shredder guitar band. It's more about songs and just really cool riffs and, you know, songs that with a bit of a message to them, you know, because the music is a little bit more angrier than, say, your pop that we do. You know, you can put a few words together that, you know, might be a bit more political than, you know, say a song like Apple of Life is, you know.
You're absolutely right, though, about the, I mean, the, when I brought up Zeppelin before, that's the thing about Zeppelin is their riffs are memorable. And I feel the same way about Datura 4. It's like you very consciously have written a memorable melodic riff, even as heavy and distorted as it may be. It just, you know, is something that really sticks with you.
Yeah. Look, I think if you talk to most guys from, you know, from like-minded bands, like myself, you know, we're all into it. We all like a little bit of Black Sabbath. We all like a little bit of Led Zeppelin and bands like that, you know, and, 10 years after or whatever, you know, Johnny Winter. These are all things that I listened to and grew up with and I still like, you know. And depending on the day, you know, I might be listening to all sorts of things, you know. So the other day I was just listening to Dusty Springfield all day, you know. So I loved her singing. And then, you know, Soft Machine another day, you know. So I just like to listen to a lot of different things, and you get ideas, you know. And it's all linked in with melody. If there's a tune in there, you know, and it's done well, I like it.
I heard that you might have a new Datura 4 album in the can.
Yeah, just working on it now. It's almost there. Just a couple of mixes away from, yeah, finally finishing that one off. So, yeah, that's...
Will that be out on Alive as well?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I hope so.
You've been with them for a really long time. I mean, besides Datura 4, I know Stone Age Hearts, DM3, your solo work have releases on Alive. You know, and they have a great roster too. I mean, Jossi, Left Lane Cruiser, Bobby Lees, Black Keys all have releases on Alive. What was it about the label or the roster or maybe Patrick, the owner, that made you feel like it was a good home for you?
Oh, they like my music, I guess. it just works well. Yeah, it's a sort of an uncomplicated kind of relationship. I do the records and they promote them quite well. So it's just great to have someone release, your music. I kind of see it a bit like any other artist, a painter or something, will you sort of do a bit of work and is doing that at the time and gets it out there and for people to hear it, and hopefully there's people that like it and accept it. That's kind of the way I approach it, really. I'm not sort of looking to become a big star or anything anymore, that kind of thing. I just work at it and just release music and, do what I can to kind of promote it. It's just great to have an outlet, and it's a very cool label, and it's linked with Bomp and all that. It has all those things about it, which is cool.
Let's talk a little bit about touring. You've mentioned a lot of the different tours that you've been on and everything. Do you still enjoy playing live?
Very much so. Yeah, I do. Yeah. Yeah. I think that is the thing that I love the recording and the writing side of things. But if you can get out there and actually play it live, and that's a totally different thing as well, because the songs take on a different character, I suppose. Don't have all the studio overdubs that you've done, and you're just presenting it pretty much as a raw band. I really like that, and songs reinterpret themselves in that. Sometimes you kind of go out there and you play live and you think, well, why didn't we record it like that? Is it sounding so much better now? But, that's how it goes. Some songs have a new life. And we like to, in Datura 4, for example, we like to stretch out a little bit and make the songs, really kind of work into some kind of frenzy, I guess, for people that, the few songs that we do, they're always different. That's what I really like about it. You're sort of creating it on the spot.
So it's all kind of improv, just jamming it
on
stage.
We leave things open to that, yeah. Obviously, there's some songs that are structured in that, they start and they end. There's not a lot that you do in the middle. That's just the way the song is written and the way the song should be presented. But with Datura 4, there's always that jammy element in it. We try and make it exciting, so it's not just sort of an ongoing lead guitar solo or anything like that. We have a keyboard player now who joined on the third album. He came in as a session player, and then we asked him to join. He's really opened up the whole spectrum of the band, and that what he brings to the band is such a great musician that even as a songwriter, he's really opened me up to trying different things and new ideas that I can actually go, hey, Bob, I'm thinking of this. Can you play it for me? Rather than have the conventional kind of four-piece guitar band, having a keyboard player that can play amazing sort of Hammond or even Lug or any things like that. It just opens up a whole new palette of ideas, of the musical ideas and layers and music, yeah.
I hope you guys go on tour. If you come anywhere near the west coast of the United States, I'll be there.
Yeah.
I would love to
still
watch
hope
that
to
live.
I think that we can do that one day. It would be nice. You never know.
Do you mind if I ask you lightning round questions? Just a few quick questions. Some of them are kind of silly, but
sure.
First band t-shirt you ever owned?
First band t-shirt. Ramones.
What's it?
Yeah.
Very cool. First concert you ever went to?
First concert? Is it like we're talking major band or just local band or?
Yeah, sure. Let's say major band.
Okay. There was a band called Sherbet. It was an Australian band called Sherbet. Yeah, they were very big here in the 70s. My girlfriend bought me a ticket. That was the first big concert I went to. Prior to that, there was a festival in my local town here, my hometown, called the Fremantle Rocks Festival, and it had Lobby Lloyd and the Coloured Balls. I don't know if you've ever heard of those guys. They're sort of a cult band, heavy blues rock band, and that's kind of, you know, that kind of music at the time was quite big here, and a lot of the bands of that festival were that style. We're talking, you know, really long hair and pretty heavy music.
I mean, do you go out and watch live music in Perth now still?
I do, yeah. Yep.
Are there, you know, Australian bands that you think that you hope that the world will find out about that haven't made it out of Australia yet?
Well, it's a local band called the Reinhardts. You might have heard of those guys. I worked on their album, and they're great.
Like, you produced Benny Ward, their album, right?
Yeah. The main guy, Benny Ward's just an inspired guy. He's a pop wizard. So he's doing really well. He's got a solo album out now, which is really cool as well. It's just like pop, sort of garage pop. Very short, sort of 2-3 minute songs that just, again, he's got the knack with melody and catchy hooks, and he's great. He's an all rounder. He's you know, he plays in some punk bands and the Reinhardts, and there he's got his solo thing, and he also does videos, and he's just done a video for me, for Apple of Life. So
really,
yeah,
he's
great. Who else on the East Coast? Yeah, there's a few things that I like. Obviously, you know, You and I and bands like that. I think they're quite well known over there.
You know, Reinhardts, I've played them on the show before. I thought that album was great. Didn't realize that you were the producer, but as soon as I saw them, I'm like, okay, that makes sense now. It's
yeah, I've known Benny for a while. He was in another band previous to that, which was more of a sort of, yeah, punk style rock band. And he moved back to Perth, and they supported The True or False. And I sort of watched them, and I thought, wow, there's some really good songs this guy's got. You know, I really enjoyed them. They reminded me of so much of, you know, that DVs kind of thing. And I thought, well, these guys, you know, if anyone releases their stuff, you know, they should get a good producer or something like that. Not saying I'm a good producer, but I put myself forward. I said, look, I'd really like to work with you guys and get something well recorded so that, you know, people can hear these songs that you've got. And that's how it came about, basically. And they took me up on it, and we worked on this album together, and it was a great experience. It was a really fun, and it was just great to work on, you know, these songs that Benny had written are just great songs.
Back to my weird questions. Weirdest gig you ever played?
Ooh, weirdest gig I ever played. I've played quite a few weird gigs. I'm not talking. Sort of try to pick the best one or the funniest one. The Majestic Kelp got asked to play this art exhibition one time. I was in a shopping center, and yeah, we didn't know what to expect. They didn't have anything prepared for us, like a PA or anything like that. So we just rocked in with our amps and started playing, and there was lots of other people milling around, and it was just really strange, because a lot of people were some people were sort of putting their hands over their ears, and some people were really liking it, and it was really strange, and we sort of got about halfway through the set, and they told us to stop. And the people that were sort of running the art exhibition were very apologetic and everything like that. And yeah, that's one strange one anyway.
What is your go-to guilty pleasure track that you listen to?
Donny Iris, Aaliyah, you know that song? The Dr. Iris song? Yeah, I love that.
That's a great song.
Yeah, I suppose that's not a guilty pleasure, not really. I like Hall & Oates. There you go. I've outed myself there. Run to You by Bryan Adams.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
Another great song, yeah. Actually. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's great. And I, you know, when people say, oh, what do you like that song for? It's just a great song. I just think it's got an anthemic vibe to it. You know, I don't know.
What's your favorite Aussie record from the 80s that's not your own?
Yeah, he's probably Know Your Product by the Saints.
Favorite character on the Munsters?
I like Herman. Yeah. Herman was pretty funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I heard that was your favorite TV show. So
yeah, I sort of go from that to the Addams Family. I like them both pretty much. You guys had some great sitcoms, you know, in the 60s. The sitcoms that you guys produced in the 60s are just fantastic.
I didn't know they all played. You mentioned the Monkey Show playing in Australia. I had no idea that they, you know, because these were silly shows, but they were all awesome. I loved them. I had no idea. They played them
right through to the 80s, you know, the Monkeys. They were still relevant here, you know. Like I got to know them, and I got to know them a little bit in the late 60s, but I was quite young then, but yeah, through the 70s, the Monkees show was played, yeah, on our TV stations here. Great songs, right?
Well,
amazing songs.
They are great songs. And, you know, they really are. I just
like through the Monkees, I got to know about Boyce and Hart and people like that. Yeah, you know, just fantastic songwriting. Their big influence on me and the style of song that I, you know, tried to write, I guess. Yeah, we got the whole lot. We got Gilligan's Island, and we got F Troop, and all those. I Dream It Genie.
That's awesome. They're I love them. They're great stuff. Yeah, it's not always easy to follow all that you have going on, but where is the best place for people to try to do that?
Well, I have a website, and that's usually up to date. It just has all the things that I'm doing and what I'm at the present time, as well as you know, has links to all the previous things that I've done, like the Stems and Digging Three and Some Loves and that. So yeah, or social media. You know, I have a Facebook page and I'm on Instagram, and I have my own personal ones, as well as some of the bands have their own pages, which,
Well, I want to just take a second and give a huge thanks to Susie Shaw at Bomp, Patrick Boissel at Alive for helping put this together. Everybody check out bombstore.com. Susie's bundles are basically a treasure hunt in a box. She always has cool stuff she's putting together. You mentioned your website. That's dommariani.com. I know you're on Bandcamp as well. You can find all the good stuff out there. Everybody buy an album, tell your friends, show some love. If you take what we're doing here, please like, subscribe, and follow Pop Rocks Radio and all the usual suspects, TikTok, YouTube, wherever you waste your time online. Dom, this has been such a pleasure. Big thrill for me. I'm such a fan. Thank you so much for taking the time to do this.
Thanks. Yeah. Thanks for reaching out. It's nice to talk to you. And yeah, I'm not sure if I remembered everything quite right, but it's good to sort of reflect on some of those things. Yeah.
I was talking to Susie Shaw right before this, and you know, she loves you. She, you know, she always says that she wishes all musicians could be like you. Yeah.
Thank you, Susie.
So when your next album drops, would you come talk to me again?
I'd love to. Yeah, I'm really excited about the new album. I can't wait for it to come out. I hope everyone likes it. It's it took a while to make it, but I'm glad it's done, and I think I'm pretty happy with it. I think. Yeah.
That's so exciting! I wish you well with it, and I can't wait to hear it.
No worries. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Dom. It was great to meet you, and I'm looking forward to talking to you soon.
Thank you.
Trying to lose weight? It's time to try Hers. At forhers.com/foryou, you can access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss treatments tailored just for you. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply. Weight loss solutions are not one size fits all. Hers makes it simpler to get started and stick with a weight loss plan backed by expert-guided online care that puts your weight loss goals first. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.